It's time for what Podcast International called the greatest podcast in history. Open your ears, because it's time for Man Thoughts with Brian Callen.
All right, everybody. This is Man Thoughts with Brian Callen. Been dark for a little bit. Back.
Yeah.
You can get us on. You can tweet me at Brian Callen, B R Y A N C A L L E N, or at Facebook. I never check my Facebook. These are my producers telling me this. What else am I supposed to mention? Anyway, well, I'll tell you what I'll mention right now before we get into my awesome guest. I did kettlebells yesterday. Okay. I did 100 swings. Now, I'm in fairly good shape. I'm having trouble, like, sitting in my car, all right? My ass and my hips and my hip flexors and my upper thighs and, you know, right behind my balls. The whole thing hurts. But you know what? It's important because you got to do kettlebells in case I need to, you know, ring a bell, a huge bell, like the bells in Notre Dame. Or should I say Notre Dame?
Notre Dame.
Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, so we've established that my lower body is very strong. I went hunting with Joe Rogan in Montana and had no problem humping about 50 pounds of meat that I slaughtered back out of the bush. Before we get into this, I'm going to be at Helium in Philadelphia this Friday and Saturday, which is November 9th and 10th. And then I will be at the Gotham Comedy Club the next weekend, Friday and Saturday, the 16th and 17th of November, at the Gotham Comedy Club on 23rd Street in Manhattan. So come out and check me out because I'm hilarious. Speaking of hilarious and deep and intelligent with a shaved head and tattoos, Dove Davidoff in the house.
Hi, everybody. Phil, you're going to like Helium's always fun. You know, it's right downtown, so there's a place to actually walk around. You're not on the side of the highway somewhere. Yeah.
Where are you going to be?
Yeah. This week, Thursday through Saturday in Addison, Texas, Dallas Improv.
Done it many times. Yeah. Dove Davidoff, for my money, what do I know? I've only been in comedy for 20 years. It's the funniest comic working.
Yeah.
And they're making a movie of your life starring Renee Zellweger, Johnny Knoxville. Johnny Knoxville's playing you.
Based. Yeah, yeah.
Is that exciting? That you're having a movie made of your life in a way.
It's based, the truth. Inspired by. Yeah, yeah. So take some different turns, but yeah, basically.
What's that like?
What's it like? You know,
it's weird.
Right now, I'm trying to get rid of a moth that keeps fucking with me.
There's a moth in that.
Yeah.
They're making a movie of your life, and you're trying to get rid of a moth.
Yeah, well, the moth is an immediate concern. The movie. Listen, you know, I mean, how do you feel about anything? You know, I mean, we're all salmon swimming upstream. You know, in the end, nothing matters. But it's really important that we try.
I know,
that's
but
the most important thing.
Isn't it worth just sitting back and saying they're making a movie of my life?
Oh yeah, it's.
And now you're getting a movie of your life as a TV show off the ground.
Yeah, yeah, I'm doing a small short pilot for Fox.
Any part for me in it?
Forget
it. Let's move on.
It's always a part. Yeah.
It's funny though when you're in something, like you know when you're actually doing something, you don't really it's never what you think it is, right? I always often think about that with the elections coming up.
No. I think it's important to be very very appreciative. I'm very appreciative that anything can happen because the world doesn't owe us anything. I mean, I was talking about that with that psychiatrist I saw. That I was thinking about the idea that whether or not we have an innate right to exist. You know, he was saying that you are under the impression that you don't have an innate right to exist, and maybe because you didn't feel like your parents should have had kids in the first place, which clearly they shouldn't have. But
that's a pretty profound thing for a psychiatrist to tell you that. He'd spoken to you for how long when he said that?
Oh, not that long. He could read me. He could see it in my eyes. I could have bumped into the guy at a coffee shop. He would have known I didn't think I had a right to live.
Do you think that that's the core of your psychological profile, the fact that you feel like you don't have a right to exist?
But what I was wondering is, do any of us have a right to exist? And does that sense of, you know, it's like the idea of American exceptionalism. It's like the idea that there are absolutely things that are wonderfully exceptional. I was talking to the mic.
Yeah.
There are things that are extremely exceptional about America, but the idea that you fell out of your mother's pussy in between Mexico and Canada clearly doesn't is not associated with any exceptional quality that an individual has. You know, it's the idea that people have this thing where it's like, well, you know, I belong, or I'm something. What does any of it mean?
Well, know? That's an interesting thing because we were talking about too many people
on the planet now. Does everybody and everybody they talk about how precious life is? Clearly, government's put a number on life. If it's too expensive to go over there and deal with the warlords in Darfur, I mean, nobody wants to give up half of what they're earning to preserve that which they claim is precious in the first, but they're all full of shit, you know?
I mean, no, but that's interesting. You're right. We were talking about how it's important to realize that, you know, this book Guns, Germs, and Steel talks about this. I mean, the fact that, you're lucky that you were born, and like you said, it's a sort of an accident of math. You're lucky. I always feel very lucky. I was born basically to American parents. I'm a white male.
Yeah, and you had thin legs. You had a very thin calf.
Yeah, I have big calves, actually.
Wow.
But I'll show after the interview. I'll show you what I'm talking about.
I can't wait to get a look.
And a thick
piece. I've got some butter in the fridge.
Thick piece. I look like the letter L when I'm standing naked.
That's right.
But the fact that, you know, it's true, man. You know, I always feel like, what a luck of the draw. It's like growing up overseas and stuff. They can't hear. Your neighbors can't hear me.
Yeah, okay.
But growing up overseas, you know, in poverty-stricken countries in the 70s and even part of the 80s, you do.
That's
got to
help create perspective, right?
Yeah,
that I think the average American doesn't
have. Why was I so lucky?
Right.
I can't stand people without perspective. I can't stand people who think that they're the
center. That drives me nutty, man. That drives me crazy. Well, that's
acknowledge
that wacky,
that you're fucking
entitled
lucky.
Sense of whatever. But I think that's connected to that sort of that reality show component in our culture. Like the idea of being famous for being famous. It's like, it's connected to some sort of innate right to something that nobody really has a right to. Why does anybody have a right to? Don't we all have to justify our existence? You know, there's 7 billion people on the planet. Part of the reason that maybe the world's resources are sort of being stripped is because evolution has not been allowed to take its place. People are living artificially much longer than they need to live. The people that are dying, you know, I don't know. I'm not sure what the right answer is. I know there are too many fucking kids, you know, these animals having kids.
Well, actually, believe it or not, in a lot of parts of the world, including the Middle East, the populations are declining. Major parts of Europe's population growth is negative. In fact, China itself, believe it or not, China, because they were so good at population control, restricting people to one child, China actually doesn't have enough people in certain parts of their country to replenish their work supply. That's what I've read. I don't know if it's true now, but that's certainly what I read many times in the past 2 years.
It's got to be tough to get tail. In China, right? I mean,
because women were
to have babies, male babies.
Males
right?
were more important. Now females are more important.
Oh, right. Well, now because the balance they need to counterbalance the policies.
Because what has happened is women were finding out through a sonogram whether they were going to have a daughter.
They'd have an abortion. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, overall, it seems like the Earth population is growing, but I think it's growing in a lot of the places where life is unsupportable. It's growing in certain parts
of
Africa; they can barely feed.
I have a different point of view in that I think that technology is moving at such an exponential rate, and you have things like golden rice and things that are incredibly nutritious.
Sure, hydroponic stuff.
Modified organisms. I know that Greenpeace and I know a lot of these organizations are against genetically modified foods. And what I have to say to them is that we've been genetically modifying food since the beginning of time. Again, read Guns, Germs, and Steel by Jared Diamond.
All right. That being said, wheat is still filthy, but yeah.
Well, you know,
refined flour, the garbage they're putting in food.
Yeah, sure, but
they didn't have the technology to create food that isn't actually food. You know, 200 years ago,
well,
they were mixing things, so there was genetic sort of. There was a some cross
again. I mean, that's right. I mean, I think some people, you know, it seems to me food's big business, and so is getting people to eat what you put out.
Right,
there.
Right. There's only so many ways you can sell broccoli. You know,
right.
There's
but if you and yogurt, for example, but you can create a concoction of yogurt,
and then it's a new thing.
Things that
you know,
sell
now you have
for
a new
a lot of money.
Got a new marketing.
That's
kind
Michael
of tool.
Pollan's book, I think.
Yeah, Pollan's good. Yeah, yeah.
I think one of the things that he talks about in Guns, Germs, and Steel is how lucky you know, Northern Europeans and
oh, clearly, yeah, no,
for
all
growing
about
growing in growing up and living in the what they'd call the fertile,
right, the
crescent,
fertile crescent,
because
yeah,
there were animals you could
sure, they
domesticate,
had livestock, you couldn't do that in Ghana.
Grasses that grew that were more nutritious,
yeah,
barley, millet, wheat, things like that.
But I'm wondering about like the right to exist, you know, like what does that mean? I guess you have to feel as though you have a right to live, and you just don't allow that.
No. I think it's a different question. I love the question because I actually have always felt this. You ask what right do I have to exist? Well, I happen to think that I've always felt an overwhelming need to justify my existence. To justify and to pay homage to the fact that I've been so lucky to be born into great circumstances.
Yes. But does that the need to justify one's existence can become overwhelming to the point where there's sort of a depressive quality to
it.
That's
why we call it balance.
Yeah, you need balance.
That's
what it's all about.
Not
equilibrium.
Only that,
that's right, in my opinion,
where being in the moment comes in.
Yes, you're
that,
absolutely
in my
right.
opinion,
yes.
is why it's important to taste your food, taste your and know the difference.
I learned that from you. I mean, I'll never, my palate is not what it could have been, so I'll never really understand in nuanced subtleties. Well, it's
take my palate workshop.
I should take the palate workshop. Yeah, that's like trying to teach somebody to run.
My agent and your agent, Justin Edbrook, who's a great guy. Smart dude, that guy. And
I like Justin. Justin's great, man. Justin's on it.
And he, Justin said, man, you should be endorsing your own wine. Because I love wine.
Yeah,
he said, there are a lot of people that listen to the podcast who've got some money.
Pitch. I would invest in that company. I mean, I couldn't have you running the company.
No.
But
no.
You as the pitch person?
Well, I would have to go and find a good wine. I'd have to go to a vineyard and really find the wine that I have a very specific palate that I would endorse.
I saw on a Bourdain
but the wine,
episode.
Wine changes every year, though, is the problem.
Yes. Well, clearly, it's a labor of love, and it's an art trying to make it, from what I understand. I don't understand much, but I saw Anthony Bourdain episode about like a finance guy who tasted some Burgundy one time, and then the dude just he took off and went to the region of France where that's done. I guess it's the Burgundy region or whatever. And so the guy was the first American ever. He just walked into this place. He was so passionate about it. Into this, you know, 500-year-old tradition over there making that stuff. You know, it was a real ballsy move, but he was very passionate.
Well, the
and he makes it by hand.
The rivalry between Bordeaux, for example, and Burgundy is as strong as literally in some places the rivalry between countries that have been to war together.
If you are
a Burgundy winemaker,
you
do not drink Bordeaux.
I've always said that.
If you live in Burgundy, if you live in the Burgundy region, you don't drink Bordeaux.
Yeah, you don't drink it. Yeah.
So and there's no question about that. It's a really strong rivalry. I've talked to winemakers. I've talked to French people about that. Try buying some Bordeaux and Burgundy. Very difficult to do.
right.
You know.
Right. Yeah, you can barely.
And they're
find
very
shit.
Different wines. You know, very very different wines.
I like.
I'm lucky. I like all of them, and I don't have to live in either one, but. What we need to do is go to Biarritz, stay with Joey, and go and drive to Bordeaux an hour and a half up.
Yeah, we gotta go somewhere. Orion rented a car. He flew into Rome and just drove all around. I always thought that would be interesting as well. But to go to Biarritz would be wonderful. I mean,
I don't do that.
Yeah.
What's your idea of a dream vacation?
To leave with. I mean, you know. A lot of puss. No. I
tail everywhere.
I bang a lot, twice. I don't have a dream. I don't have a dream one, but I'd like to see things. You know, I like to see things and experience things. Again, it's that Bourdain thing. Like you want to experience the soul of quote unquote of wherever it is that you're going. Like wherever I go, I don't want to eat at Burger King. You know, I want to go to some place and experience something that I wouldn't be able to experience.
You want to immerse yourself in someone else's expression.
And immerse yourself in someone else's expression.
That's what it is,
that's
right?
A good way of saying
that's what
it.
That's what I love about great food. Chef-driven restaurants, that chef is putting his point of view into food, man.
Oh, yeah, no, it's tremendous when you get like that. You feel that there's some sort of artist. When somebody gives a fuck, you can tell a difference at whatever they're doing.
It makes such a huge difference.
It makes such a big difference.
It's actually what we, the cornerstone of where we, how we define a culture. Think about it for a second. You know, people say, well, art's
but that's
not-
what America was very good at initially, like, you know, through the Industrial Revolution. It was all about making the thing really well. And then once you became dominate the marketplace, then it became about selling the thing. Mm. So then it's about the smile behind the product. It's no longer really
that's interesting.
And you feel this homogenous quality to life here in many ways, right? I mean, you go on the road. When's the last time you go on the road and you're somewhere? I mean, it came reasonably late to Los Angeles, the idea that you can go to really like artisan shops where people care about what they're doing and know about it.
I know.
Fucking France, 20 miles outside of Paris. You stop at a restaurant, you order a French dish made by, you know, French. They know what they're doing. I mean, it's you're not getting garbage.
Very much
here,
so.
They'll fucking fry up, you know.
Well, you know, a lot of that has to do with lawsuits. You know, that a lot of restaurants, you know, we live in a shitty society where people sue you for anything.
But we don't have a 500-year-old tradition of anything. You know?
Well,
and so,
that's true.
And we're also a mix of people, which has given rise to many other wonderful, you know, ingenious kind of.
We're great restaurants in L.A. where we are, man. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Great
sure. Yeah. No, there are some. Just
no,
just
but it's
in
true.
General.
It's true. With it, like, you really, when I think of Abbot Kinney, when I think of Venice, for example, I think actually first of a handful of restaurants that I go to, because the there's nothing like going into a place where somebody has thought about every single fucking detail.
Oh yeah, no,
and
no,
more
no,
importantly,
it's meaningful,
the food
yeah.
and the
yeah.
and the environment is sort of a harmonious song. There is you know, when you open a great restaurant like Jelena, you can see that Travis Lett, who's the owner chef and the other and the other investors, they spent a long time figuring out how to set up an environment where you walk in and immediately feel like you're in a farmhouse or something.
Right.
And the food mirrors the environment.
Yeah.
That takes not only an eye, it takes an eye for harmony.
Yeah.
It takes an eye for how things go together, which I have no talent for, by the way.
Well, no, but you're talking about, I mean, I think all of these things have a creative corollary, right? The idea of a voice is that marriage. The idea of a good writing, good, you know, anything. It's something that took somebody 10,000 years to get, 10,000 hours to get good at.
You know what I love about that? You know what I really love about that, I think? The 10,000 hours of practice that gives rise
it's
to something.
Craft thing.
There's a distillation. It distills to its essence who that person is. Like, I think that creates a purity of expression. Like,
That's the objective, I think, right? To find what it is.
So.
Yeah, to find, I mean, what else could it be? I was watching.
Well, no, because let me go a step further. When you see a great piece of art, you see a great play, a great movie, listen to a great piece of music, I'll tell you what happens. I think it reminds you of your best self. I think somehow it kind of brings
that's
you
that's interesting,
to,
right.
It does. It reminds
subconsciously.
You. Subconsciously. Without it, what moves you is the fact that you go, I think I have something beautiful inside of me that I haven't touched in a long time. Because at least I'm crying or laughing at this thing. I think, you know.
I think that's
so it connects us. You get connected.
Oh yeah, there's a real
that.
Resonant quality, and I think that's part of that, right?
Yeah.
So if you walk into it, but you feel something, it's connected to some subconscious
think about the idea that if you see something, you see a great. I watched Jerusalem, which was this play on Broadway, and the girl started to sing. Now I started kind of tearing up. Well, why?
I went to a swing club with a chick from the. She was a lead singer in a musical. Went to a swing club. We got it on the bathroom. It was hell of a musical.
That's not the point I'm talking
about. If you're going to bring up musicals, I got to tell you what my association is.
I'm not a big musical guy, but this was a
you
play.
Love
the girl,
music.
The girl
you
had
love
to sing
dancing.
In the beginning.
You love song. You're
I
a
like
song and dance man.
I'm a song and dance man. When the money's right, the guy's got, you know, the guy's going to help me with my rent.
Song and dance. Yeah, if I could do it, I'd do it.
No, but I think it's interesting that you can cry at something that makes you profoundly joyful.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
how
weird,
tears can be
but it's
related
weird. Why
to...
would you cry at something that's profoundly joyful?
Well, that's
why do
an
you cry at something
question.
That's glorious?
Right.
Why? Why tears?
Well, I think that there is something, maybe on a subconscious level, that immediately there's a bittersweet. The bittersweet nature of existence is that with all of the, we have the, we're gonna die. There's something about knowing that we're going to die that makes everything more beautiful and everything more horrible, and and the cross section, the intersection of death and life
is
bittersweet. Well, the idea that something is so wonderful.
That it's going to last forever, or that it transcends all that stuff?
Maybe it transcends it, or maybe
there's a way out. There's a way out. There's a way out. There's a way out of the dreck. There's a way out of death. There's a way out, right? I mean, it's
well, there's transcendence, but there's no way out in the in our
yeah,
earthly
but when
form.
You transcend in that moment, you're not
in
thinking
that moment.
About those
maybe
things,
there's
right?
a way out. Yeah, certainly there's an in the moment Zen-ish quality, the experience that removes you from yourself. It's ironic that people seem to experience the most happiness when they're removed from the
themselves.
Weight of their existence. Mm. You know, when you're just truly in the moment. But ironically,
that's what they say the zone is. That's what they say the flow is. You know, when
yes.
people are playing sports at a high level or playing music at a high level.
Right, but why is that? Why are people so sort of? Why do people want to get away from themselves and their subconscious and their, whatever the inner machinations are of our minds? Why is that problematic
well, you just
for
did something
us to
with
deal
your hand.
With?
Well, you just did something with your finger. It was very interesting. You said the inner machinations of our hand. You know what you just did? You just did a
yeah,
circle.
A circle.
And we all do that.
Yeah.
You just traced a circle in the air. And my feeling is that that's very telling because the inner machinations of our mind and the inner machinations of our physical existence are just that. You're always going in a circle.
Right.
And somehow when you touch something beautiful, whether it's music or painting or whatever.
I did last night. My girl, she came three times.
Hey, sometimes that can happen. I hear you do very good work from her.
It's not that.
But here's the thing: when you do transcend something, and when you talk about that experience, your hand goes up. Your hand kind of goes up.
Right. So that's
even your body
it's
language.
So subconscious, right?
Well, like, you just went like this. Your hand went up in the air. You pointed toward the sky.
Yeah.
And when you talked about your physical existence, you did a circle. You did three circles in the air.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's interesting to me because. In that sense, it seems that's very telling in the idea
I
that we're on a fucking
how universal those expressions are.
Buddhists call samsara the wheel of suffering. Samsara is you are always until you detach from the physical and the I, the ego, you will always be on that wheel of suffering.
That's the part of the issue I have with Judeo-Christian philosophy with regard to the way we experience the planet and existence. You know, and from the East, we're part and parcel of the earth. Mm-hmm. When in the Bible or I guess. Guess from the Jews' perspective, who knows what they're up to, right? But but from the perspective, Judeo-Christian values sort of say that we're supposed to be stewards, good stewards of the earth, but we're not really of the earth. And when we die, we go somewhere else.
That's very true.
And it I think it manifests itself in some very sort of awful ways that people treat the planet, treat animals.
Well, Joseph Campbell makes a big distinction between.
He's gay, right?
No,
Campbell.
No,
he's gay.
He's not gay. He died, but
yeah, brilliant.
He made a very good distinction between Eastern and Western mythology.
Yeah,
Western mythology, Judeo-Christian ethic, is a linear mythology. In other words, there's an omega and there's an alpha and an omega. There is a beginning, a middle, and an end to time.
And what's Eastern?
To time, and time began with Adam and Eve, and it ends with the apocalypse.
Oh, right.
You don't have.
Yeah, that's a bullshit idea.
Well, I don't know, but I certainly do.
Well, I know Adam and Eve.
Let me give you the bright side to that. Yeah. Now the Eastern philosophy is circular. It's cyclical. The Bhagavad Gita and the Buddhist teaching is all about the idea that you are a leaf on a very big tree.
Like. That's the one I like.
Okay,
yes.
But remember something.
Yes.
What gave rise to the most innovation in the world was probably the notion that it comes from the part of the Jewish mind, the Greek mind, was the idea that you as an individual can change time forever with your thoughts and your ideas. And you can master nature because you have to, or you're going to freeze to death. You're not going to have enough food for the winter.
You can't master
like
it, though. You can alter your experience of the conditions.
Well, we have gone way beyond our own biology. You know,
talk to the people in Seaside Heights. Their fucking roller coaster is sitting in the ocean. I don't know that we're ever going to master
nature,
it. But
nature will humble you.
Yeah, it sure will. Yeah. But it sure will. But we should find it humbling. And we're all part of stardust, whatever you want to believe in. We're all carbon-based life forms that sort of, you know, on a subatomic level, we're made basically out of the same thing as this fucking couch. Mm. And the idea that it's the rationalization that, well, you know, I mean, animals were put here for us. No, they fucking weren't. They're trying to live their life. You watch a deer in a field that's doing its thing. And I understand you got to kill shit once in a while. But I don't like that Judeo-Christian. I don't like the Jews. And I don't like these fucking Christians.
Coming from a Jew,
like anybody.
Coming from a Christian Jew, by the way.
Yeah, exactly.
Your father was Jewish. Your mother was Christian.
Yeah, Protestant. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of... Yeah, of any group at all. Although this Anton LaVey, I was listening to actually Marin's podcast. He was interviewing this artist named, he calls himself Coop. I think he's a relatively famous graphic artist, and Coop was talking about his experience with Anton LaVey, who became a good friend of his. Anton LaVey wrote the Satanic Bible, but it wasn't all about sort of, it wasn't about what do they call it, like sacrificing anything or killing fucking kids or blood. It was about acknowledging the part of ourselves, which I think we get into a lot of repressed. That's more Judeo-Christian shit. We get into these repressed kinds of, I don't know when society, when we started distancing ourselves from the reality that we are, in fact, animals. That's when, remember, you look at Victorian dresses, you look at these people, the whole thing was about trying to distance yourself from the reality that you want to fuck, you got to take a leak, you got to do whatever. It was all about using a number of forks. Culture often, I think, evolved through the desire to distance ourselves from an organic reality. And I think that's a major, major problem.
I think that there's
denial of death was about that.
But there's
as well.
There's a different perspective. I think that first of all, when you were, let's just take the Victorian era.
Yeah.
When you were in those climates, you had to distance yourself from nature to survive.
I'm not talking about distancing from nature. I'm talking about even the people in warmer climate. I'm talking about distancing yourself from sexuality. I'm talking about walking around going, monogamy is the only way.
Well, I was going to address that too. I think that was a result of a couple things. One, first of all, you've got to remember the Victorian era happened before antibiotics, when syphilis.
I'm not talking about the Victorians alone. I'm talking about
everybody. I'm just talking about throughout most of history.
Yeah.
Promiscuity led to a couple things: death and childbirth, and a host of awful diseases, not the least of which was syphilis.
I understand. I mean, listen, even
like
the Bible, when they talk about.
But more importantly, I think the philosophy that we all adhere to as we go get older is the idea that that having command over your appetites, the battle between the spirit and the flesh, and mastering yourself, which goes back to Socrates way before the Christians, that is in almost every major religion, Buddhism, every Eastern religion, and every Western religion, the idea that you at the end of your life want to master your physical animal, your appetites, is the higher way to go.
That's different. It's Yes and
I think
no.
I'm just saying that I think
yes
that might
no.
be
first
where
of
culture
all, first of all,
aspires
it depends
to.
What? Well, it's the wrong thing to aspire to because there's that mastering your appetite is like saying we're going to suppress. It depends what people mean by master. If by master you mean create equilibrium so that we don't go overboard,
that's Aristotle,
right? But if mastery means I'm not an animal. I'm above. I'm something completely different than that. And
that's Plato.
I don't, and my sexuality, that's a very repressed idea. The idea when you sort of, that's where you get those fucking, that's why a lot of those psychosexual kinds of crimes that have been committed are often related to early childhood, religiously associated repression and suppression of all of the things that we are, right? Mm-hmm. Think about if you grow up believing that masturbation is a sin.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Think about it. Actually, if you really believe that, everybody laughs at that. If you really believe that.
I was taught it was a sin by, I had a Catholic priest come in and tell me that
taught,
it was very bad.
Were,
I didn't listen to him.
You were not inundated with that stuff.
No.
You didn't grow up in a super religious
household. No, and you're right.
Household.
And in James Joyce's,
that makes
in James
nuts.
Joyce, a portrait of an
Irish
girl, artist of a young man.
13-year-olds that are fucking in the ass before they ever, you know, because to lose your virginity through your vagina
is a sin.
Prior to marriage is not only a sin, you go to hell. Like, it's bad.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just a, you know, talking back to your mother's a sin.
What was it? Was it Joyce's Portrait of an Artist as a Young Man? I think that's what his education as a his Catholic Irish upbringing was. He left Ireland because of it.
Look at what it does. Look at what it does to families. Look at what it does. Like, if you wonder, even the people, what is the correlate between all these guys that get involved in the priesthood and then some sort of
they're one of the great parts of Trinity, the great book on Ireland by Leon Uris, the great book is, and I recommend anybody who wants to read anything about the founding of Israel or Ireland by read Trinity or Exodus, but Trinity, the great part is where I think his name is Connor, who is the hero of the book, and he and his wife enjoy sex, and she tells the priest that she enjoys sex with her husband, God. And the priest tells her what a sin it is, and it destroys their marriage.
So if that's mastery, then if that's mastery, if distancing yourself from the appreciation of healthy sexual whatever it is, if that's mastery, I don't want to be a fucking master.
I'm right with you. I think you're right.
Right now, I'll pull it out. I'll crank off just to prove a fucking point.
We're on, it's a podcast.
I don't care.
You're gonna jerk off on a podcast.
You see that olive oil over there? I'll grab that bottle of oil. Yeah, I'll stroke it down.
But we're
buddies. I'll peel one out. You're goddamn right.
That'd be very awkward.
We're real close.
This is man real thoughts. Close. This is man thoughts.
Okay. I'm a man and he's my fucking thoughts.
I know. That's all I think about. I told you about that story
where that dude, the radio guy was telling me on air. So I'm not, talking out of school here. Is it the phrase talking out of turn? How we were talking about how cocaine or whatever drug, whatever somebody's doing, can hypersexualize you or just make you want to talk, whatever.
Sure.
In his case, the result is a very sort of hypersexual behavior to the point of delusion, to the point where he thinks that you think that what he's doing is okay. He was on a plane with this chick, high as a kite. She was like, I don't know, she was like in her 60s or something. And he's all high, and he just looks at her, and he thinks that she's looking at him like he's looking at her, when in fact she just wants away from this guy.
Christ.
She's next to him. He turns to her, he goes, So, when we land, you want to have sex?
When we land, you want to have sex?
When we get to the ground, we could have sex. And it's like, and in his mind, so he's at his house. And he's just got some people over. They don't realize he's high as a kite. He's got people over. He has people over on Tuesday night. It's Tuesday night. He forgets. They show up. They're all playing a board game. This guy's with some girl he's high with in the living room or in the kitchen, which is connected to the living room. And he spots some olive oil out of the corner of his eye. He's like, that would feel good. So he says, get the olive oil. She pours it all over his cock. And then she starts beefing over. She starts stroking
beefing
the guy.
It off.
Yeah, I mean, really, really. You've seen me work a dish towel.
Of course,
right?
I've seen you work a dish towel.
So she starts jerking him off, and all of the people that are at his house look over, and he realizes they're not hip to any of this.
Holy shit!
Yeah.
So nobody else is high.
Nobody's high.
That's like being at school with no clothes on. No,
precisely. Nobody else is high, and he's getting jerked off, and everybody's there. He had to call everybody the next day and be like,
sorry, I'm a closet perv. I would have been like, I
would have
looked over and been like,
finally, a party I can enjoy.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, no. And even if you were the perpetrator of said act, you would find a way to sort of through your enormous charisma, people would lighten the fuck up
so we could all get this going.
Well, lightening up and the mastery of one's sexual appetites do not coincide. I think the mastery in the sense of equilibrium they do.
I am of the school. I am certainly way more of a hedonist than I am the other. I mean, I just think that anytime you get into the business of suppressing the truth, which is your biology.
Our biology is an animal biology. And so the idea that
having
we're
said
to distance
that,
ourselves.
Well, but
from
no,
that
like having said that, you
can't
said it
give in
before.
Either. You have to create equilibrium.
It's called the golden mean. It's called Aristotle's golden mean.
Judeo-Christian is not a mean. The Judeo-Christian sort of relationship with sexuality and it's not a mean.
I think
it's
it is. I don't think that's
Christianity?
Fair. Well, I don't think it's fair. I think the Christianity.
Well, take a look
allows,
at the Bible.
No, the Christianity allows for sex in marriage. I mean,
Hold on. Jerking off is a sin. That's the end of argument. There's no argument that if Christianity says that, then they do not allow for a reasonable compassionate, decent, healthy understanding of human sexuality.
Right. No, I don't think
I don't care if it allows for sex within marriage.
I don't think Christianity. Although, again, don't you think that it's a question of how you interpret the Bible? A lot of Christians.
No. I'm talking literal interpretation.
Well, but a lot of Christians don't at all. First of all, a lot of Christians can be very devout and they masturbate.
If you're talking,
they look at the Bible as a symbolic guideline.
I'm not talking about that. Yeah. You're talking about 21st century Chris. You're talking about reasonable people that go, I figuratively understand there are many beautiful components of this book, and I'd like to incorporate them into my life. You're not talking about, when you talk about, I'm talking about literal interpretations of religious texts.
Yeah.
Figuratively, they're all great.
Yeah, but you're drawing a distinction now between fundamentalism and and religious.
Well, what has Ireland been for the last 500 years? I mean, if you want to call it fundamental, call it whatever you want. I'm saying there's a lot of sexual dysfunction inherent in that philosophy.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I don't think there's any way around that.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Certainly, but if you have a figurative interpretation of something and you can create balance in your life, that's the objective.
I think people have been fucking behind closed doors for the longest time.
But that's the problem.
Yeah.
When you do shit behind closed doors, it ends up getting weird. They create more animal porn in Germany than anywhere else in the world.
Yeah.
Okay, there's something about a repressed culture that manifests itself, and you think that it's not a coincidence that they're really good at math. You're very structured. You fucking work hard all day long. You're building a new kind of motor that lasts for longer but uses less fuel. You got to watch somebody fuck a sheep around five.
Well, this is why I've always loved the romance countries like Spain and Italy and France. They give a lot of room. They create a lot of room for you to step outside those bounds.
And I've always
appreciated that.
Of course.
Italy, for example, gives a great deal of room to the human experience in all its dimensions. Crying as a man, fucking around by accident, making mistakes.
Oh,
in
France as well. If you're a politician and you have
this country, conversely, is very puritanical.
That's my fucking point. Yeah. That's my problem, man.
It, to the point where you have to have you, where a presidential candidate has to talk about how much he loves Jesus Christ, right?
Precisely. If you have a problem with your wife and you happen to be a politician, the idea that you can't get a divorce and still be a good president, the idea that you can clearly both have gotten a divorce at one point and still be a good commander in chief, a good senator, good whatever. This is the only fucking country in the modern, in the industrialized country that says if you got divorced, you're unelectable in many states, in many offices.
Reagan actually circumvented that, but that was because he had gotten divorced way
earlier. There are exceptions to every rule.
But for the most part, you're right.
For the most part, you're absolutely right.
We're very unforgiving of any kind of sexual sort of misconduct, and very unforgiving of anybody who's not a believer in Jesus Christ.
It's so fucking backwards, man, and it doesn't help.
I think it's changing, though. I think those attitudes are changing.
You'd think it would be, right? I mean, there's a 60% fucking divorce rate. You'd think those attitudes would relax after a while. I don't know.
Well, I don't know. I don't know the answer. I know that...
I don't know.
I know that it seems that the 50s were a time when you weren't even allowed to show your personality.
Yeah.
The 60s swung all the way the other...
Yeah, the
other
closer
extreme,
you get...
60s and 70s. And then the 80s came back into a different sort of weird hybrid of it. The 90s, I think AIDS changed everything. AIDS brought a lot of that puritanical behavior back. It created a lot of guilt in sexuality.
Yes.
It also, ironically, liberated the gay community and gave the gay community a lot of power and brought them out of the closet because they had to come out of the closet. They had to fight for their rights and the right to live. So there was a silver lining in that. Sex and society has always been a very complicated matter, and most societies
not near the equator, they just bang.
Well, they do just bang.
Look at the equator; they know how to shake it up.
They know how to shake it
Any
up.
Any culture that's really good at drums and not building things higher than two stories, they fuck. They fuck.
That's what I call them. That's my favorite
kind
of culture.
Of course it is.
Well, you know, the further south...
If it was up to me, we wouldn't have satellites.
The further south you go, you got to fucking Miami.
Yeah.
And there's nothing like it. Yeah. It is just sex everywhere.
Yeah, what's going on behind that coconut tree?
I've never seen asses like that in my life. It's just this wonderful blend of...
It's as though the ass is already built up high, so that it's easier to get up underneath and push it in.
Well, they all wear high heels. There's no flats.
Well, yeah,
no one wears flats.
Too.
There are no white girls around there.
Right.
No northern white girls who wear flats with, you know, hunched backs. It doesn't happen.
Right.
Those girls have tiny waists, arch backs, and you know, it's hard to be a man and not want to do all the things that Christianity tells you not to do.
You got to put it in, man.
Miami takes the Christian right out of a man.
It takes the Christian right out of a man. It'll beat the Christian right out of you. You go away. You can go in there chaste and pious as hell.
But, you know, you're talking this way, but you're a very disciplined, self-restrictive guy.
In some ways.
But even in the other ways, you have... Talk to me about...
I don't believe in worshiping false gods. I don't believe in worshiping money. I'm a capitalist. I believe in going out and competing and using the system to the best of my ability.
Right.
Although I think we'd be better off in some kibbutz style thing in little sections where everybody contributes to the whole. But that's not the way it's going to work. Brian, you didn't get any sound out of that.
Keep going.
No, no, I was just thinking, I mean, in terms of discipline.
No, but what's interesting is that you yet are a very self-restrictive guy. I mean, you
in
don't...
some ways, yeah. But, and that's about equilibrium. That's not about denying our nature.
Okay.
You know, that's about trying to go, all right, I got some shit I want to do. It's a effort will be required.
Okay,
effort
but
and discipline are synonymous.
End? Why? Is connection very important to you? Is accomplishment very important
to you? I want to understand. It's important to try. And trying sometimes results in accomplishment.
Try for what?
Because the idea of potential, the idea of having hands and being provided with enough fucking food to get by and a place to live. And it's like, if you're not struggling to survive, you kind of got to struggle for something else. Human beings
if you're not struggling to accomplish something.
I don't think I want to get mixed up with the word accomplish, because accomplish sort of, there's ego involved in accomplish. I think it's more real effort for the sake of. And so inevitably, part of the byproduct will be accomplishment. And part of it, I think, you're
so. In other words, finding out what you're supposed to do anyway, and doing it to the best of your ability.
Doing it to the best of you, right? Because see, accomplishment. In your case, that was Van Gogh. Was Van Gogh considered accomplished? One of the great painters of the history of fine arts or whatever it is. And you're talking about a guy who never sold a single painting. He's like, is that I mean, that certainly wouldn't be considered successful by today's definition. We need to rearrange the definition of success. Mm. I see a lot of successful people that are not successful people.
Huh.
You know, like you see these guys, you see some, you know, I know a lot of Wall Street guys. Do you know how fucking difficult it is to make $1 million as a banker? You need a reasonably okay IQ job. That's
right.
All you need.
That's right.
That's all you need.
Yeah. And a work ethic. Yeah.
To a degree.
To a degree.
You don't have to be. You ain't got to be gangbusters in any way imaginable to make $1 million. You do in other areas.
One of the other things I see a lot of very successful people in the art in this business that are selling the equivalent of hamburgers with the movies they put out.
Yeah.
But they're not doing anything that's
right.
going to last.
So
I got to tell you, Matthew McConaughey in that movie Magic Mike. This guy wants to fuck himself so badly. He's so pathological. This role he took, where it was literally an excuse to wear very very tight and really homoerotic outfits. And not really make a choice as a character, but rather do this guy who's hyped up on dancing and just trying to be as sexy as he can with his southern drawl. I've never met anybody more vain. This guy is a mess. Matthew McConaughey, you got to get help. Channing Tatum was outstanding in the movie. I don't know why this guy chose. He was grabbing the other actors and hugging them really hard and dominating them and pushing his nose against theirs and almost kissing them and getting in their faces. And I was like, what are you really doing, bro? Why'd you take this role? It's not a real character. If you own a strip club and you dance, you're not that crazy. You were playing a cokehead,
a guy
who was obviously doing either blow or was crazy. He would have been great as a spoof in a spoof, but this guy was trying to play a real character.
Right.
All I saw was a dude who was like, I get to wear great, cool, sexy outfits.
Weird, right?
I'm going to wear really, really, I'm going to wear a Speedo and a fucking chest girdle.
Okay, but this is connected to
what
the
a
idea.
Wackadoodle,
but this
man.
Is all connected to the our sort of the definitions that we use for accomplishment,
success and stuff,
all those things. Yeah, it's like,
but this guy, I mean, it's like, Matt, come on, Matt McConaughey, get it together, bro. Listen, I know you know it's not a gutsy performance. That was a vain performance that didn't even the character. You come off stage and you're hugging the dudes and I do stand up, motherfucker. I'm on stage for an hour and a half. Come watch my show and watch what I do to an audience, okay?
Yeah,
and when I get
weird,
a standing ovation
right?
or something, I don't come off stage going no,
oh,
dude,
God.
No, I don't do that. What I do is I go, it was really fun, man. What a privilege.
It is odd, right?
You fucking yoker.
Like that. Yeah.
That's not a real person, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
I guarantee that male strippers don't come off and fucking hug the other guys.
Yeah.
That shit is amazing. No, they don't do that, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
You just want an excuse to fucking, I'm half to way jealous of his
is
body,
it,
by
it,
the way.
Well,
but
no,
that
no,
takes
no, sure,
a lot of
sure.
tanning, a lot of fucking lifting,
listen,
and a lot
listen,
of shaving.
Yes. If you get a role that requires you to do that, your body will be
Look,
right
this
there.
This guy fucking
of
jerks off at his own highlight reel. I guarantee he's got
a
fucking reel of him stretching and lifting weights and he's jerking off on himself.
Idea, but I think the larger idea is that when the human ego, when we don't keep that in check through self-awareness or whatever it is, through self-awareness, through sitting still once
in
a while.
He needs a friend like me. McConaughey needs a friend like me so I can smack him in the fucking mouth and say, hey, bro, stop with the fucking, with the shower cap, the gold fucking halter tube top, and those fucking hot pants. You can't hang out with me like that, bro.
Right.
Even if you bang guys 24/7 and you're really, really gay, you're still not allowed to dress in that outfit, you know?
that is a good look.
It's like, what are you fucking doing?
But that's when.
Are you a male go-go dancer?
Yeah, but that's the problem, right? And when people get away from their center, that's what happens on. Whether it's some dude going nuts on Wall Street that thinks that, you know, it's false gods, whether it's an ego or just money.
Well, when your god is yourself, it's pretty crazy. This guy, I guarantee,
when
has
your god
a statue
is yourself,
of
you
himself.
End up in Speedos. Right. But see, then your god isn't really yourself.
I could never hang out with that guy.
No, but that kind. I haven't seen it, so I don't know what.
You
got to
see
it.
It's just like, dude.
I'll actually never see it. But.
Well, it's Channing Tatum's great. Sexy,
yeah, I want. Yeah,
unbelievable.
Yeah,
body,
I
want to
watch.
Great
that.
Acting.
Yeah, I can't wait to watch that. Yeah. of all of the choice, you know, there's plenty of things.
My buddy
Joe
Manganiello is in it. Who's a great guy. And a fucking stud, 240 pounds, 6'4".
Yeah,
These guys are great.
Yeah, I'm sure they're all great.
Anyway.
You know, I'm not involving myself in a review of Magic Mike.
Of male strippers?
I'm
not trying to put down somebody's work.
I'm just putting down somebody who
fucking worships themselves as their own god.
No, you're talking about ego as it relates to wacky, negative, sort of self-serving, awful behavior. And yeah, clearly, if that's the case, then yeah, it's a bad scene.
Isn't there fucking... You interviewed Lorenzo Lamas, I understand.
Oh, now you're talking about a man.
That's a real man.
Now you're talking about a guy. Knows how to wear a vest.
Well, listen, you know. All right, well, listen. Okay. We got to jump. This has been awesome. You need to start doing the podcast more, because I'm going to start having more interesting friends on.
Yeah.
And I love having you on. So that's Dov Davidoff, ladies and gentlemen. Plug your dates one more time.
Yeah, I'll be in Addison this coming Thursday through Saturday, and then the following
Addison, Texas,
Dallas Addison Improv, and then the following week at Charlie Goodnight's in North Carolina and Raleigh, North Carolina.
I've done it.
Yeah.
It's a good club. Yeah. And I will be at Helium in Philly this weekend, November 8th and 9th, and then I'll be in, actually 9th and 10th, November 9th and 10th, then I'll be at Gotham Comedy Club in New York on 23rd Street, New York City, November 16th and 7th. Come down. I'd love to see you. All right, later.
You've been listening to Man Thoughts with Brian Callen.